This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. We are rolling it back rest of the season. I'm fired up. We're calling it Wednesdays with Wes. I'm very creative in that way. I said, Wednesday, Wes Reynolds. Oh, that's got to make it work. But Wes and I think very similarly when it comes to handicapping. We love situational angles. And instead of trying to lump it in on Tuesday with Adam, let's bring in Wes Reynolds, which run through some games. We'll obviously talk some Indiana as they are a runaway freight train that can't be stopped. But Wes Reynolds, always appreciate it, brother. And I want to start with this game because it is, in my opinion, clearly the number one situational angle of the weekend, and that's Texas A&M, fresh off their win over LSU, going on the road to South Carolina, and this will be a primetime game in Columbia. I was able to, fortunately, grab four on Sunday, and I didn't know what the number would do. I assumed it would move a little bit towards South Carolina, and right now it sits 2.5. So where we stand right now certainly is a unique spot, but I'm curious your angle on Texas A&M at South Carolina Saturday night.
Yeah, I grabbed 3.5, Tim. I still think at 2.5, it's playable. Maybe it'll go back to 3 on Saturday so you don't have to rush. I don't think this is going to continue to collapse on the Gamecocks. I think that the move has already been made. But when you look at South Carolina, 4-3 off the bye, I know Oklahoma's bad, but they kind of were able to take out their frustrations a little bit. This Gamecocks team could easily be 6-1, or even if you split the difference and give them 1-1 in the close games. Of course, they lost. They missed the field goal late against LSU at home. And then against Alabama, they were a clear better team in the second half. And that was such a winnable game. They couldn't get it done, but they're a little bit better than 4-3. I think the quarterback Sellers is developing a little bit more as a passer. He's not quite there yet, but, you know, dual threat quarterback, you know, much like with A&M when they switched to Marcel Reed last week and then pulled away from LSU in the second half. We know Mike Elko with the comments. I think fairly to say it was a shot at Jimbo Fisher. Like, this isn't a politician running the program. We're a real program here. So the Aggies got their chest out. But I think South Carolina, too, they're going to be prepared for Reed, assuming it is going to be Reed as the starter and as a little bit more of a running quarterback. Look, South Carolina plays an athletic quarterback every day in practice, and Sellers, who can certainly run a little bit. Night game down there. I think the crowd's going to be fired up. This is clearly, I think, going to be South Carolina really motivated here simply because they're off a bye. They're 4-3. It seems like they have their season at least somewhat on track. And I don't think the talent gap is all that big. So, yeah, this is kind of the come down spot for Texas A&M. Now they're 10th and maybe be considered for the playoff. They have a bye week the following week, so would expect that they would be, you know, up for it. But I just like South Carolina in the matchup here. I think this is a really good defense, and they're going to be prepared for the running quarterback. So give me the Gamecocks here.
Yeah, Texas A&M now -160 at DraftKings to make the SEC championship. And you look at the schedule, and on paper you say, wow, they're going to run their way all the way to Texas, and then that game in theory wouldn't matter. But it's funny, I know you do a weekly hit with our good friend Jimmy Ott down in Baton Rouge, and my neighbor is an LSU alum, and we were talking today, and I said, you know, it just felt like Mike Elko, Freudian slip, hit the perfect timing with inserting Marcel Reed, because, you know, it's funny, Wes, I was on A&M last week, market moved against me. I'm like, well, I kind of chalked it up, especially after that first half, but it was perfect timing for Marcel Reed. And to your point, I think now South Carolina knows it will be Marcel Reed more than likely. So I'm with you. I got it at, fortunately, a better number, but I think South Carolina wins this game outright.
LSU, by the way, really wasn't ready, I think, for that switch. And, you know, they had a couple short field TDs forced by the defense, but Reed only threw the ball two times because they were able to just run on LSU. I don't know if they're going to be able to do that against South Carolina. Keep in mind, this team's got 28 sacks. They had 9 against Oklahoma 2 weeks ago. And I know Oklahoma, pretty much a makeshift revolving door at offensive line, and they switch quarterbacks, but they can get to the quarterback, and they're going to force Reed, I think, into some passing situations here, and that plays right into South Carolina's hands.
All right, let's stay in the SEC because I had a feeling you would head to this game, and I haven't gotten there yet. I don't have the manhood in me just yet, but that's why I lean on you to do things like this. So Vanderbilt has become one of the stories of the year, especially in our world, the betting world. They're 5-0 against the spread as an underdog. Diego Pavia is the underdog god, as he is 10-2-1 ATS as an underdog over the last two seasons. And if you remove the game in which he got hurt against Liberty when he was at New Mexico State, they're 10-1-1 ATS. He's 10-1-1 ATS as an underdog. But you're coming off a game against Texas. You're going on the road to Auburn. Auburn's had a disappointing year. And what's interesting to note, you're starting to see some sevens show up there in the market, including at Circa, which many believe is the sharpest shop, at least for college football, out there. So Vanderbilt at Auburn, 12:45 Eastern kick. What do you like in this one?
This is the old ticket count versus money count here, because the tickets are going to be very lopsided on Diego Pavia. And look, I've been on him a couple times this year, and they did cover against Texas. Now, they were down double digits in the third. I don't think that that game was really 27-24, even though they ended up with a 10-yard edge. Texas had that pick six called off at the end that would have put them up by 17 and really would have sealed the game away. But I'm going to go with the money here, and I think the money is right on Auburn. And remember, Diego, by the way, did go into Auburn last year and won as a 26-point underdog against New Mexico, with New Mexico State, which was one of the more inexplicable results of the season. And it wasn't really a close game where they got lucky. They beat Auburn, flat out beat them. But you've got an Auburn team that I thought played their best game of the year. They beat Kentucky 24-10, dominated them. I know Kentucky offensively, we know they've been challenged all year, but that's a pretty darn good defense. But they got gashed by Auburn last week. Auburn almost had 500 yards. Auburn's 3-5, but they're actually out yarding their opponents by about 100 a game in the SEC. The turnovers are a problem because they're -9 in turnover margin, and that's what worries you a little bit to get ahead of this number, while Vanderbilt is +6. But I think you get some regression here. Jarquez Hunter is leading the SEC with about a little less than 900 yards rushing at 278 against Kentucky, who is like pretty much impossible to run on. They certainly have been most of the season. I mean, Georgia couldn't run on them. I think Auburn, I wonder if they feel like, hey, we saved our season. You know, we're 3-5. We've got Vanderbilt coming in. The schedule gets a little bit more permissible, shall we say, at least down the stretch. You know, if you're fighting for that bowl eligibility, because you get Louisiana Monroe, you get A&M, but it is at home down on the plain, and then of course the Iron Bowl at Alabama, so there's a possibility to go 6-6 and get bowl eligible. I think Auburn pulls away. This is close for a while, and I think they pull away in the second half. So 6.5 looks like a big number, but I'm not going to take the bait on the underdog.
As our good friend Chris Felica likes to say, dogs with fleas, right?
Yes. And yes.
Last week on the VSiN College Football Tailgate Show, which, by the way, 10 a.m. Eastern time on VSiN, hosted by yours truly, we had two very popular underdogs, Navy and Illinois. That was courtesy of our good friend Chuck Esposito over at the Red Rock here in Las Vegas. 69% of the bets at the time we chatted on Saturday morning on Navy, they lost by 37, did not cover. 64% of the bets on Illinois as a 21-point dog, and they did not cover either, losing 38-9. Now, worth noting, BYU closed as a dog. 83% of the bets at stations were on BYU, and they won and covered in that one. So it's not always tried and true, but you look over at our betting splits on VSiN.com, 84% of the bets are right now on Vanderbilt. And let's get to another game that, look, I may or may not have had like three different heart attacks last Saturday night, Wes, watching SMU take on Duke on multiple fronts. I had SMU in a money line parlay paired with Minnesota, because on this podcast I said, I don't really want to lay the 5.5 with Minnesota. Well, they covered with ease against Maryland, and SMU made me sweat that one out. Probably should have lost the game, but there is a belief in turnover regression, -6 in the turnover market, and they still won the damn game. And then you've got Pittsburgh. What did Pittsburgh do on Thursday night? They had 3 pick sixes in the first half. I've never seen anything like it in my life. So you've got Pittsburgh at SMU, and it feels like this could be another trendy dog situation. Right now on Wednesday, Wes, 80% of the early bets on Pittsburgh catching the points against SMU.
Yeah, I do like SMU here, and it shows you that there's some money on SMU because now you're seeing some 7.5. I even saw a couple eights out there. My lucky was a push on the first half over with Pittsburgh Syracuse last week. That always helps when you get 3 pick sixes, because that had no business pushing. I was like, when I'm on the under, that's what happens to me. When I get defensive touchdowns, I very rarely get them for the over, but did last week. Pittsburgh, of course, the extended rest. They beat up on Syracuse, picked off Kyle McCord, 5 times, 3 pick sixes in the first half. But you would think that the rest would be an advantage, but it really hasn't been. I saw this. I think this was from Evan Abrams at Action Network. Teams game 8 or later in the season on extended rest are just 46% against the number in recent years. So you look at Pitt. The defense, obviously, the turnover regression, 5 picks, as I mentioned. They've given up fewer than 17 now in back-to-back games. But you're going to SMU, and I think that this is a little bit of a different matchup because Kyle McCord, not really known as a runner, per se. Like, Fran Brown's been letting him chuck it 50-plus times a game because Syracuse's running attack is very hit or miss. But with SMU, you do have Jennings. That is more of that running threat, I think, certainly, than Kyle McCord is. And I think when a team is on a roll, even though SMU not undefeated, they've got the one loss to BYU. But when you're on a roll a little bit and you get a scare, I think you tend to come out focused the next game, even though Pitt has the rest edge. So I do like the Mustangs here. I would not be surprised to see them win by 2 scores.
All right, let's get to something that I just found incredibly fascinating. So Army is a 22.5 point favorite against Air Force. A couple things. We actually talked about this on the Tuesday pod with Adam Burke, and then I started to dive into it a little bit more. Less than a year ago, Wes, November 4th, on a neutral, Air Force closed -18.5 against Army. So you're talking about in less than 1 year, a flip of 41 points to the spread between Army and Air Force. And it's wild to note this, because Army did win that game as an 18.5 point underdog, 23-3. Army entered that game, Wes, 2-6. They won the game. They have not lost since. They have won 11 straight games, including last year's win over Air Force. Air Force entered that game 8-0, and they have gone 2-10, including that loss to Army. Their only wins coming against the Cignetti-less James Madison squad in a bowl game, and then FCS Merrimack, which you and I, who love college hoops, know that is a very slow-paced college hoops program. Not so much, I don't know, about their football program. So, boy, this is a big old number. At Mikey Stadium, I haven't gotten there yet, but I am tempted to take those points with Air Force. What say you?
Yeah, I wonder if I'm getting suckered here. I did play 23 with Air Force. This is a little bit different than the Navy offense, which I think is a little bit more dynamic, and they're running a little more play action. They're still running that triple option, but some wing T looks. So they're being a little bit more creative. Army with Jeff Monken, you kind of know what you're going to get. You're getting this triple option where they're not going to throw the ball as much. Now, Air Force did allow 329 on the ground to Navy. Army is number one in rushing offense at 359 per game, but I don't think you're going to get as many tricks here. I think Air Force is at least going to be a little more prepared. And we know, you know, in Colorado Springs, they're a little down this year because they graduate a veteran quarterback. And sometimes you have that at the academies when you have a lot of seniors graduate and then you have these guys behind them that don't have a lot of reps. And you've really seen them fall on hard times. You know, 1-6 hadn't covered a game all year, by the way. And they're getting out gained about 86 a game, minus 12 a game on the scoring margin. But I did take Air Force here, and look, I may be a sucker going with this, because Army is clearly a good team, and they're still very much in the mix for that CFP Group of Five spot. I think Boise State probably would be the favorite to get it at this point with their win at UNLV last Friday night. But I felt like this was a lot in this series, which we know the past 10 meetings, by the way, have gone under the total and have averaged 28 a game. So when you have such a low total here and you're getting this many points and you're starting to see the market reflected a little bit, yep. I've seen it going down to about 21.5, as low as that, 42, pretty much the consensus total out there. Yeah, I'm going to go with Air Force here, because I think knowing that you're 1-6, and that you got to deal into an inside straight to get to a bowl game. I feel like this is your ex officio bowl game here.
Yep.
You know, to show a little pride, and it's a Commander in Chief's rivalry that's certainly going to be decided at the end of the season between Army and Navy. Yeah, I just thought that this was a little high, so I went with the Flyboys here getting 23.
Yeah, and you saw, you know, Navy go out to Colorado Springs and win that game comfortably, but this is a situation where, you know, Air Force didn't win the trophy last year. They lost to Army in that game that we mentioned. If they beat Air Force, if they beat Army, you know, they certainly wouldn't have a chance to earn the Commander-in-Chief's trophy, but this is their biggest game of the year. There's no doubt remaining for this Air Force squad. Speaking of military academies, let's get to Navy. We saw last week Navy, six turnovers, very uncharacteristic. And, you know, we actually talked about this game as well on Tuesday. And I might need you to convince me on this one, because my initial thought process was, all right, I get it. Rice fired their coach. You got the old, you know, fired coach bump. We saw that with East Carolina covering last week against Temple. We saw that with Southern Miss covering their game as well. But are they going to be buttoned up? Are they going to be prepared to slow down this Navy offense that is no doubt going to be pretty frustrated in this spot? But the market would say so. I even saw a 10.5 out there. That's been scooped up. So open 14, 14.5, down to 11. What do you make of Navy at Rice on Saturday?
Yeah, and it was a true freshman, by the way, for Rice, Drew Debweiler, who got his first start, only threw for 88 yards. Rice, if you look, they did face the option earlier this year, 37-14 loss to Army. So they were never really in the game, but Army actually had their season low in terms of yardage. So the special teams coordinator, I forget his name, is going to serve as the interim, but you know, you could get some inspiration here. And plus, when you lose like Navy did, when your O finally goes in the loss column, there is some time where you get that second loss. And I wonder if that's gonna affect Navy here. They have faced at least a facsimile of this offense, as I mentioned, with Army. You know, you kind of looked at it on the surface. It's like, why was Navy only laying 11 necessarily on the opener? It's like, man, shouldn't they be two touchdowns? Well, maybe there's a reason why they're not. And I think that could be priced in what is going on here. The fact that, you know, you have the fired coach. So 11.5 is what I see mostly in the market, but there are some 10.5s showing a little bit here. So I've got a little piece of Rice. It is not a strong play, but you know, there was some injury concerns with the quarterback. They may go two quarterbacks. The true fresh started last week, but they may do that here. I want to see if EJ Warner, I don't know if he's officially been ruled out, but, you know, Kurt Warner's son, the Temple transfer. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you might see two quarterbacks in here. And I just wonder with Navy, you know, that is kind of tricky because they were up for Notre Dame. I think that they were up for that game and they knew it was a big deal. And they were under the spotlight, and Notre Dame was just better and just ran away from them in the second half.
Yeah, it's one of those games where you and I, as I mentioned, we think so similarly. We like to play the stinky dogs, the stinky lines, you know, however you want to define them, the letdown spots. I'm conflicted on this one because there's part of me that thinks Navy just goes down there and smashes Rice. But the line is kind of telling you a little bit of a different story, right? Coming down from 14 to 11. You mentioned the 10.5s that were out there. I'll wait to see what the status there of EJ Warner. A couple more games I want to hit on here. Wednesdays with Wes, ladies and gentlemen. Arizona State, Oklahoma State. I just saw our friend. We got lots of friends. I'm just pointing that out there. Brett McMurphy point out that his beloved Oklahoma State Pokes are going to be wearing these unique uniforms featuring an interlocking OA that served as official letter and emblem of the OA Association, organized in October of 1909 by the athletes of Oklahoma A&M College, also known as the Tigers. So with that information, let's get into Oklahoma State taking on Arizona State, where the market has moved against the Pokes. No surprise here. And Arizona State is laying 3 on the road at a night game in Stillwater. I was able to get to the window. I think both you and I were on 2 Fridays ago with the Pokes at BYU. Fortunately, I did not take a money line Has this gone too far? Do you agree with this movement? What do you make of this one?
It's not a surprise necessarily to see Oklahoma or Arizona State get the money because Sam Leavitt is going to be back at quarterback. There, the road game at Cincinnati, they had to go with Jeff Sims, and they didn't win, and they didn't cover there at UC. Oklahoma State, by the way, the only winless team in the Big 12 right now. So I'm sure that that doesn't make our America's College Football Insider, Brett McMurphy, very happy necessarily. So look, maybe this is the bottom for Oklahoma State. I think, Tim, they lose 28-38 at Baylor. I clearly think that Rangel, if he was in there, is better because he's more of a run pass threat, whereas Bowman, you know, can throw the ball a little bit, but he can turn it over. I look at Arizona State, and Kenny Dillingham has done a good job with this team, and they probably even overachieved a little bit this year. But you look at who they beat. They beat Wyoming, who's way down. They beat Mississippi State, who has been playing better with the Van Buren boys there at quarterback, but still a rebuild for Jeff Levy. They won at Texas State, and look, Texas State's kind of disappointed a little bit in the Fun Belt. They lose at Texas Tech bye week. They come back. They win against Kansas, who's been snake bit as they lost another close game last week at Kansas State. And then they beat Utah with an obviously hobbled Cameron Rising, who is not near 100%. Go to Cincinnati, lose. They are off a bye, so that's not a bad spot necessarily. Maybe to get healthy. They haven't played in 2 weeks. But I want to see if I can get 3.5 at 3. It might be a small play, but I think Oklahoma State here. Maybe this is like, okay, the rally spot where it's like we're winless in the Big Ten. There's no real look ahead spot necessarily. There's never a look ahead spot when you're not winless. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, Oklahoma State 3-5. They've been hit or miss. They've been competitive. Like they were right there with Utah and lost. They were right there at BYU and lost. They did get blown out by West Virginia and also by Kansas State. I want to see if the money is going to keep coming in or where the resistance point. It might be right where it is at 3, but this would be Oklahoma State or nothing for me.
All right, we'll wrap with America's most famous Indiana alum, Wes Reynolds, with his beloved Hoosiers. And look, JVT, our colleague here at VSiN, likes to say, try to catch the falling knife. And 2 weeks ago, I tried with Nebraska. That did not work out. Well, a couple weeks ago, I tried with Maryland. So I'm 0-2 going against your boys. Humans last week tried with Washington. That did not go well. And I just point out the fact that Chuck Esposito, whom I mentioned already, came on the tailgate show on Saturday and said the biggest need for the house will be Washington. The public was absolutely laying Indiana, and I get it. 7-1 ATS, only non-cover was week one by a point against the Fighting Pit Bulls, and you've covered 7 straight. You've got the best cover margin in college football. Is this the spot? On the road at Michigan State, you had Big Noon kickoff 2 weeks ago. You had College Game Day a week ago. Cignetti seems to have this mojo going where there's no letdown factor. At some point, these guys are human beings. But, man, is this the spot, Wes? Is this finally when your Hoosiers don't cover a damn spread?
Well, and you had the Big Noon kickoff and College Game Day, and now you're in the afternoon on the Peacock here when you're Indiana and you're right in the playoff mix. But anywho, this is actually a trophy game, and I love, you're a college football traditionalist and historian like I am. I love these trophy games. It is the old brass spittoon.
Between
these two teams, and Michigan State won on Senior Day at Indiana last year. Rourke, we're expecting to be back. It is not officially confirmed, but he has been throwing. Kurt Cignetti mentioned that in the in his Monday presser. So I would expect it's going to be Rourke here. Certainly Michigan State going to try to prepare for both. This is a unique challenge from a matchup standpoint with Indiana, though, because this is the first time I think they've kind of played a running quarterback in Aiden Childs. You know, Billy Edwards can kind of run a little bit for Maryland, too, but they were so far behind, they had to throw every time. So this could be a more competitive game. The problem with Childs is he just turns the ball over too much. 10 interceptions this season. They actually, I thought out, you know, were right there with Michigan last week and maybe deserved a better fate. Couldn't get in the back door late. You worry about the offensive line a little bit holding up because Oregon and Ohio State combined for 9 sacks against that offensive line. Indiana's got 24 on the season. They've been very tough to run on, but You are laying a little bit of the premium and maybe some of the peak of the market, I think, with Indiana here. So 7.5. There's even, I think, an 8 at one shop here in Las Vegas. I don't know if I'm going to go against Indiana, Tim, but I don't think I'm going to lay here with, because I do think that the pressure, and I do wonder, is there, I don't know if it's a letdown necessarily, but just the energy, because you've been so up for these games, and can you maintain that energy going on the road here? You're 8-0, you're starting to get playoff talk, you know, and maybe be in those playoff rankings. I think every pundit has you in there. So, you know, we'll see. I think it's probably priced appropriate, but this game does present unique challenges, I think, from a defensive standpoint for Indiana.
Yeah, and if Michigan was just a little bit better, man, you'd have the look-ahead factor. I don't know if you're looking ahead to Michigan.
No, I think they're going to stay in the moment. I think Kurt Cignetti has certainly done a good job of keeping them in the moment. So I don't think it's a look-ahead or a letdown spot or anything. I just think it's a what's your energy level spot after you've had those two sellout crowds at home and all the national media attention, and it's still going to be put on Indiana. But you do wonder also if there's still a chip on their shoulder, because they only were ranked 13th in the poll this week. And it's like, okay, we're not getting any respect here at all. So this might be end up being just a stay away for me.
Yeah, we'll find out on Thursday, but I might hate myself again and go against Indiana. Didn't do it last week. And,
it would only be Michigan State for me here taking the points, because I don't really love to lay favorites when they're at the top of the market necessarily. You know, when everybody's kind of starting to come aboard, which I think they did last week against Washington. Now, they got rewarded, and when they get rewarded, the bettors are going to come back again on the same team. We know that.
Covered 7 straight, best cover margin in college football. The Indiana Hoosiers, they're a runaway freight train right now. 91% of the early bets over at our betting splits on VSiN.com on the Hoosiers. The only team getting more bets, a team you're betting against, potentially, in the Navy midshipman. Wes, always appreciate it, brother. We'll do it again next week. Wednesdays with Wes. It's got a nice little buzz to it. Make sure you give us a follow wherever you get your podcasts, the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. We're back tomorrow with Matt Eumanns. Wes, appreciate it as always, man.
You bet, Tim. Thanks for having me.
There he is, Wes Reynolds. Follow him on social media at WesReynolds1. Read all his work at VSiN.com. We'll be back tomorrow with another VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.